Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 198, Understanding Teenage Psychology with Annie Fox. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
I do a talk for parents called Why 21st Century Teens Need 21st Century Parenting. And that aspect of what's going on with teens today is very different. And I attribute the fact that we live in a faster world, a louder world, a more plugged-in world, and a world where there really are fewer adults around. And so a lot of the information and the norms of adolescence are being formed outside of the family.
That was the voice of my guest, Annie Fox. In 1997, Annie Fox, M.E.D., and her husband David co-founded the Marin Computer Center in San Rafael, California. It was the world's first public access microcomputer facility. Then she began exploring ways technology could be used to empower kids, and this led her to write her best-selling introductory computer book, Armchair Basic, which launched her as a nationally respected writer and designer of children's software. In 1996, at the dawn of the Internet age, Annie dreamed up the idea for the InSight, a highly acclaimed web resource for teens. One of the InSight's most popular features is Hey Tara, a cyberspace relationship advisor. Annie's award-winning book, The Teen Survival Guide for Dating and Relating, is based on hundreds of email questions from teens around the world and Annie's responses to them. Annie's second book for teens was titled Too Stressed to Think, A Teen Guide to Staying Sane When Life Makes You Crazy. Annie's currently working on a new series of books for middle school students, which will focus on issues of identity, popularity, personal power, and self-acceptance, through her web work, her writing, and her live presentations for students, teachers, and parents, Annie continues working toward her goal of helping teens become thoughtful, compassionate, socially responsible adults. Now, here's the interview. Annie Fox, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me, David. It's a pleasure.
Yes, you were a guest of mine, I think about a year ago, on my other podcast, Wise Counsel Podcast.
I remember.
Yeah. And you and I have had some conversations more recently because you contacted me because you're thinking of maybe getting your own podcast going down the line. And in the process of talking to you about that, I sort of got freshly excited about you and your work.
So very kind of you to say that.
Yeah, you know, I've known your husband, David, for a long time. I haven't seen him in a long time, but he was a student of mine, I don't want to say how long ago, but when I was first starting out teaching at Sonoma State University. And I feel like I know you really well, but have you and I ever actually met in person?
I think maybe once, but it was a really long time ago. We were touring our daughter around colleges and brought her to Sonoma State and met up with you then.
Oh, okay. Now, I didn't even remember that, but that starts to ring a little bit of a bell because, I have this feeling that I know you, but it's because you are so visible on the internet and, of course, due to our interview and some email correspondence. Well, you've written a number of books for teens and you've raised, is it two of them yourself?
Yes.
Yes, and you regularly give workshops for teens and for parents. So all I can say is you are one brave person.
I think that there is a bad reputation that goes along with the word teenager, and I don't think it's deserved.
Yeah, I'm probably reinforcing a bad stereotype there.
So you got to watch that.
Yeah, yeah.
We were all teenagers once, and look what lovely people we turned out to be.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. That's true. You started out a long time ago writing a computer book. How did you get from there to being an expert on teens and the parenting of teens?
That's an interesting question. I'm not a computer tech person at all. I kind of like to think that I got dragged kicking and screaming into the computer age by my husband, David, who has always had a fascination with technology. So back in, must have been 1976, yes, we were just brainstorming with a bunch of friends about what we could possibly do next, and what came out of that brainstorm was the idea of the Marin Computer Center, which was going to be a public access microcomputer facility where people could come in and essentially play games and become comfortable with this new technology, microcomputers.
Right, yes. I go back that far. So I remember when all of this was new and exciting.
Yes, it was pretty amazing. We were fortunate enough to rent a space in what was a brand new multimedia center in a public school, and the people who built it apparently didn't see that at that time, 1977, we're talking about now, the birth rate had gone down and there really weren't enough children to fill this school. And so they had a two-year-old building that was just gorgeous, and they were essentially renting it out to nonprofits because they had not enough kids to fill the school. We were a nonprofit educational corporation, and so the Marin Computer Center moved into this space. I wrote a couple of press releases, and the first weekend, 700 people showed up.
Wow.
Yeah, you have to understand, this was September 1977, a year after we got our idea. We were not selling computers. We were simply giving people an opportunity to interface with this brand new technology in a very friendly space with plants and high beam ceilings and games. So all of the stress was taken away from that idea of me at a computer. It was just fun. And a lot of kids showed up. And it dawned on me at that moment that there was something very natural about the interfacing of kids and technology, where the parents were hanging back, the kids were just diving in. And so to answer your question, it just occurred to me that since social emotional development of young people and children had always been an interest of mine, that there was a way to connect those two, the love I had for helping them grow into fully functioning human beings, and games and technology, it could all kind of come together. And that's really where the bridge was built.
Uh-huh. Well, you really do have a love for helping them to develop and grow. And that really comes through on your website, which I'll mention early on here, is anniefox.com. That's A-N-N-I-E Fox, F-O-X.com. And maybe we'll talk more about that as we go along. Well, I was fascinated to see on your blog that you and your husband, David, went to Washington, D.C. recently for the Barack Obama inauguration this past January.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and you wrote an inauguration blog for teens. So tell us about that experience, both your impressions of the inauguration and, you know, how it was being a correspondent for teens and what sorts of feedback you might have gotten from them.
Well, I had never done anything like that before, and we'd been obviously following the campaign so closely from the very, very beginning. I was caught up in it, and I saw the participation of young people was an important element of the grassroots network for Obama. And though most of the people were college age, I thought that it was not too much of a leap to imagine that middle school and high school students were also very excited about his candidacy. So after the election and our decision personally to travel from California to D.C. for the inauguration, I just got this idea that I wanted to virtually bring along the kids who emailed me all the time about relationship questions, because I took great inspiration from Obama's candidacy, from his speeches, from his words of calling to action, national service kinds of programs, and getting young people involved in the process. So when I got the idea to create an inaugural blog, I contacted several local middle schools, got myself into some eighth grade history classes, and just essentially presented the idea and said, I'm going to the inauguration. Want to come along? And the kids got really, really excited. The teachers were totally on board. And I gave myself this challenge to be blogging at least once a day. It turned out in the 6 days that we were there, I posted 18 blogs. And the kids started writing just wonderful comments. They were posting comments, indeed, about the importance to them personally, about the election of the first African-American president, what it meant to them, how it opened up their eyes, how it made all things possible. And it was just a love fest.
Wow.
Yeah. And I, even though I was freezing there in D.C., whenever we got to a place where I could check my email and check the comments that were listed, I was completely warmed, because I could see that what we were doing was making an impact on these kids, and many of them were so far away, this just brought them closer to the events, and they felt a part of it, and that really was my intention.
Now, what were you writing in your posts?
In my posts, I was covering visits that we made to the Library of Congress, to the Capitol, to the Smithsonian. We were fortunate enough to have a lot of time. We didn't get there the day before the inauguration. We got there the Thursday before the Tuesday inauguration. And so we had arranged with our Congresswoman, Lynn Woolsey, to get tours of some of the buildings. The Supreme Court was another one. And so I wanted this to position this blog as a look back to the past as well as a look at the present, which was our inauguration of a new president, and what it meant for the future. And I was trying to tie it all together. Washington, D.C. is an incredible place that allows people to see exactly what led us as a country to where we are now. And there's so many different ways you can enrich your own experience by touring these places and really taking the time to get really entrenched in the history. I am an American history buff anyway, and so I was trying to make it very interesting. We took wonderful photographs. I did a lot of research, so that all of the blogs are just chock filled with hypertext links. So if the kids wanted to delve deeper, for example, and I was talking about the history of the inaugural parade, not only did I have a Google map right there so that they could see the route of the parade, but I also went back and said and told them about the first inaugural parade of George Washington, which, I don't know if you know this, David, actually took place in New York City.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, because that was our nation's capital at that time. And so I was just trying to bring all of it alive to the kids who were reading the blog. And as a teacher, I found myself getting very interested in the process of making it seem relevant to them.
Now, you say as a teacher, are you currently a teacher, or were you originally trained as a teacher?
Yes, I have a master's degree in education, and I do have a teaching certification, but it's been a long time since I've done the kind of in a classroom teaching that we usually associate with the profession. I am a teacher, and now I kind of think of myself as an itinerant teacher. I go to schools, I do assemblies, I do teacher trainings, I do parent education around adolescent development.
Well, now you're a teacher, kind of in the way that I'm a teacher, aside from what you just described of using this technology to get your message out to the whole planet, really, which it just gives us such a marvelous bully pulpit, if you will.
I agree. Yeah. So often I have been receiving email from tweens and teens and parents for the past 12 years. So you can imagine I have some very interesting email that comes across.
Oh, yeah.
The kinds of questions that students would probably not raise their hand in a classroom setting to ask, but they want to know.
Well, what kinds of questions would those be?
Well, a lot of them have to do with getting along with other people. The kinds of questions that come from a dilemma where a seventh grader is absolutely perplexed because her good friend is not acting like a friend anymore. And the communication is shut down. And so the girl who's writing me the email has no clue why her friend is angry with her because the other girl's not talking. And then the question is, what can I do? And so it's really communication skills. It's helping them understand what they can and what they can't control, especially within a relationship. It's giving them the reinforcement message that sometimes you need to just accept reality the way it is, in this case, that friendships change, that friendships evolve. And as I sometimes like to say, they're kind of like a pair of shoes. You know, if you're in seventh grade, chances are your foot is still growing. And those shoes that you loved last summer, if you find them in the back of your closet and try to put them on right now, they probably don't fit. Now, you're not going to blame the shoes, and you're certainly not going to blame your feet. It's just a reality. The shoes don't fit anymore. And in the same way, sometimes friendships don't fit anymore. And it doesn't help us at all to carry around anger or frustration or hurt or resentment towards the person who is no longer feeling close to us, better to just acknowledge the good times and acknowledge the reality that right now, this friendship seems to maybe have outlasted itself. Time to move on.
Yeah, what great advice. I mean, such a practical, down-to-earth, understandable metaphor. And I notice you have a section of your website is called Dear, is it Tara?
Hey Tara. It's called Hey Tara.
Hey Tara. Yeah. And I guess Tara is kind of a, what would you describe, a sub-personality of yours? I mean, it's you.
Yeah, it is me. It's always been me. I came up with the name because, you know, Tara is the Greek word for earth. So I kind of thought of myself as a virtual Mother Earth.
Oh.
Kind of the global good listener.
Yeah. So, you know, I've read some of your, I've read some of the questions there and some of the answers, and the example that you just gave is a wonderful one. It's really striking that you're not talking down to them at all. You know, it's very kind of straightforward, and you really don't pull your punches if, you know, you put it right out there. What your values are and so on in a very straightforward way. Do they realize that they're, and it's kind of like, it's an advice column, kind of like Dear Abby or something like that. And it's clear that you put a lot of thought, preparation into it. Do they realize that they're writing to someone who is, how can I say this delicately?
Over 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
They do?
I don't know. Sometimes at the very beginning, people would, I think the kids would wonder if they were writing to another teenager.
Yeah.
And they'd say, are you a teen? How old are you? I said, do you really think that a teen could be this wise? It takes decades to get to this kind of wisdom.
That's great.
And you know, it's not really an advice column in that you get personal service with me. I answer every single one of the emails I get.
Boy.
So I may not post every single one, but everybody who writes to me gets an answer, and they never have to wait more than 24 hours to get it.
Well, I try to do the same thing, and either fortunately or unfortunately, my audience of writers is still of such a size that I can do that.
Yes, and me as well. Even though over the last 12 years, I've probably accrued at least 10,000 emails.
Oh, my goodness.
When you think about it, I mean,
that's huge.
Yeah, but it's a thousand a year.
Yeah, that's still a lot, yes.
Divide that by, so 3 a day?
Okay.
Yeah, that's doable.
Yeah, that's doable. So right now you've written some other books, and right now you're working on a 5-book series titled Middle School Confidential. Now, where did you get the idea for that series?
Well, it actually started out as a single book. It was going to be a book about middle school because most of the kids who seem to be most clueless are middle school students. And if we think back, 6th through 8th grade is a very tumultuous time. Everything seems to be shifting. There is little stability in the life of a 6th through 8th grader. They look in the mirror, and every day they kind of look different. Their physical body is changing. Hormonally, they're all over the map because of those changes that are happening. Their friendships, as we just mentioned, are shifting. Their relationship with their families is changing. You've got the new experience of moving from one class to another every 50 minutes, and you have to start dealing with the personalities of 6 or 7 different teachers and their expectations of you. There's a lot. There's the boyfriend-girlfriend zone. You know, there's just a lot to deal with. And
I'm having flashbacks as you talk.
I know, you could break into a cold sweat.
Yeah,
you know, it's
right.
Like, oh my God.
Right.
So I have great empathy for middle school students because they are probably the most bombarded with issues and the least prepared to deal with them. Their maturity level is what it is.
Yes.
And yet they're kind of all of a sudden swimming in the deep end, sometimes deeper than they ought to be, but a lot of it is very normal. So I feel they were the neediest in terms of a target group. They were the ones that I wanted to write for. Mm-hmm. And so I had this idea for a book that was essentially how to maintain your individuality while you're in an environment that demands conformity.
Oh, that's interesting. Take us through the 5 titles. I know you have 5 titles. You've written 2,
yeah.
2 or 2.5, and you're working on the rest.
I'm working on number 4 now. Book 1 is called Be Confident in Who You Are. And just like my website for teens, it really starts with your relationship with yourself. So I figured this was a good place to start.
Yeah.
The second book is called Real Friends Versus the Other Kind. And that's coming out in June. And it really is a guidebook to helping middle school kids differentiate between what is a real friend and what is that other kind of friend that we sometimes find ourselves affixed to, but it's not a healthy friendship. The third book is called What's Up With My Family? Because again, you know, there are so many changes, and it's very difficult. Let's put it this way. It's very challenging for your typical 7th grader who spends all day from 9 to 3 and beyond trying to conform with their peer group. And when they get home, the last thing they want to do is cooperate and conform. And so there's kind of a schizophrenic element to this back and forth home to school. And I thought it would be helpful to try to educate middle school students about the changing dynamic in the family, to give them some appreciation of a trajectory that's going on here for them, how things have shifted from being the compliant and loving and cooperative little girl or guy mm-hmm. at home who only wanted to hang out with mom and dad and receive their praise, to the contentious young person who is just trying to find their own identity within a very set dynamic, which is the family.
And that's not hard just for them, but also for parents really struggle around that.
Yeah, it's really difficult for parents. So that when I do parent education, that's something that comes up a lot, that feeling of being rejected by your own kids, the hurt, even though you know, if you've read any of the books, the key phrase is, this is not about you, Mom. This is not about you, Dad. But yet there's your child yelling at you to get out of their room, to leave me alone, you know, all that stuff, which is very rejecting language. And it's, you know, we're human beings. We get our feelings hurt. We love this child more than anything. And yet we know that this is part of their quest for independence. And it's normal. It's natural. We need to let them do it. So we have to figure out a way as parents to get out of the way and just accept the fact that this is process and that it really, truly is not about us. And yeah. When we make it about us, we just exacerbate the problems.
Yeah, that issue feels really fresh for me just because I'm in a men's group, and one of my friends in the men's group is the father of, I think, 4 daughters.
Oh, my. And
yeah, he sometimes talks about what it's like to be the only male in the household. And his other daughters are pretty much grown, and the youngest daughter, the one who was the baby, is 13 or 14, somewhere in that zone right now, and is going through all the stuff that you've just described. And I've seen him go through kind of a struggle. On the one hand, he very much knows that this is part of the process and that she needs the space to do what she's doing. And at the same time, I think he's really grieving the loss of this compliant, loving little girl that she used to be.
I know, it's sad. There's a heartbreaking aspect to being a parent.
Yeah.
But the good news is that they come back.
Yes.
They do come back, and I think it's a testament to how well we parent them during this time, whether they want to come back and hang out with us.
Yes. I'm a father of 4, and I'm happy to report got good relations with all 4, and they have come back in that way, even though there were some challenging times that we went through.
Of course. I'm always suspect of parents who say, we never had a moment's problems with him or her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it.
Yeah.
So our kids now are 29 and 24, and we too have wonderful relationships with them. And yes, there were bumps. Of course there were bumps.
Yeah. What, you mean a perfect expert such as yourself had bumps?
I wonder how you could possibly have any empathy for other parents and what they're going through if you didn't go through it
to
some degree or another. And I was a pretty miserable teenager myself. So, you know, I have empathy for the kids.
Mm-hmm. That's probably got something to do with why you're doing this work now.
I would guess so.
Yeah.
I really would.
Okay, well, we were moving through your books.
Right. So book 3 is What's Up With My Family. See, that took a long time.
Yeah, that's a hot one.
Really? Book 4 is the one I'm working on now. It won't be out until the fall of 2010, but it's on my desk now in manuscript form. And it's called School Is What You Make It. And it really is based on the premise that there's a lot of stuff that happens between 9 and 3 that's completely random and out of your control. And there's a lot of stuff that happens during those hours that you have unwittingly set in motion.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you have a science test tomorrow, and you want to do well. You're absolutely going to study, but before you sit down to study, you're going to be playing your PlayStation 3. And there you are. Next thing you know it, you're on level 5 of this game that you had never done. You've never done this well before, which makes it harder to quit.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, Dad's knocking on the door and say, okay, sport, time to get to bed. It's almost 11. And, oh, darn, I never got to my science test studying. Okay, I know. Not to worry. I'll set the alarm. I'll get up extra early tomorrow. Or if that doesn't happen, I'll find some time before class and, you know, I'll cram some studying in. But for whatever reason, that doesn't happen. And you fail. And that can really bum you out. So the question is, was that a random occurrence? Or my choice to not get off the PlayStation, did that kind of set things in motion? Now, as adults, obviously we can see cause and effect here. But it's much harder for teens and tweens because that part of their brain that can actually and accurately predict the outcome of a choice in present time is not really functioning very well. And so it's really difficult for them to connect the dots.
It seems like part of what I hear in the title, it maybe is a call to take some responsibility for what's happening to them.
Yes.
I'm remembering my experience not only with my own teens, but even with college students that I work with these days, that there is a tendency to blame other people, to blame the teacher, to blame the parents.
Yeah, the feeling of victimization. This is not fair. Wait, what am I, a bad luck magnet? I mean, this stuff always happens to me, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
But to be able to point out in with humor and in a straightforward way that, in fact, this choice you made here is absolutely a direct result of what you got here, it's I think that's empowering. To know that your choices matter and that to that degree you can dial down a bad day or dial it in the other direction. You can't control everything, but a lot of what happens to you is based on choices you make.
Sure. What a great message to get across to young people, you know, while they're still kind of forming their personalities and their attitudes, because those attitudes will kind of harden and coalesce and have a very big impact upon the kinds of adults that they turn out to be.
Yeah, it's attitudes, it's belief systems, and it's your mode of operation in the world.
Yes.
So I think it's very powerful to get this skill set under your belt. The other thing about these books, which I love, is that they're part graphic novel.
Now, what do you mean by that? I've read that on your website, and I was hoping that I could see examples, you know, and turn some pages.
Yeah, you can actually, on the website, you can download an excerpt.
Oh, okay. I have to dig around more than I did.
They're full-color comic strips inside the book.
Oh, well, that should have great appeal to that age group.
Oh, yeah, they're great. So there's 8 chapters in each book, and I've got these 6 characters, and the characters are 7th graders.
Uh-huh.
And so I use this fictional universe and these characters to exemplify some pretty common situations and feelings so that the reader can identify and watch the characters stumble and hopefully learn. And vicariously, they can go, ah, okay, I get it. The books are also filled with quizzes, with what I call empowerment tips, and one of the most popular aspects of the books is that they're filled with quotes from real middle school and high school students. So you don't ever feel like you're the only one who has felt this way.
Yes.
And I think that's really, really important. So, for example, right now I'm looking at book 1, Be Confident in Who You Are, and the first chapter is called I Hate the Way I Look. So it's all about body image.
Yeah.
And I've got a bunch of quotes here from teens who talk about how they feel about the way they look. Here's someone named Matthew, age 13. My hair looks like crap. Caitlin, 11. My eyebrows are ginormous. Bethany, 11. My tongue is weird. Mike, 13. I've always hated having a big belly. So here the reader can go, oh, yeah, I felt that. Or, no, I don't have that complaint, but I've got one like this.
And these are actual quotes. These aren't things that you just made up.
So here's the beauty of what I do, David. I've got all these kids who email me daily. So whenever I need quotes about a specific topic for my book, I'll just send out a questionnaire. It's like, hey, Tara needs your help now. You know, you've written to me for help. You know, tell me, how do you feel about the way you look? And they'll just, you know, email me back all these wonderful, wonderful quotes.
Oh, that's great.
No, I don't use their real names, but their ages and their gender. And, you know, there it is.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of instant material for the book.
Instant material through the emails and through my solicitation of these quotes. Book 5 is the last book of the series, and it's called What's Next? And at this point, after 4 books of being in 7th grade, my characters are now in 8th grade. And what's on the horizon for them is high school. Mm-hmm. And so the whole book is about transitioning from middle school into high school.
Okay. Now, one or two of your books are already out there in the wild, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten any feedback from these young readers or from their parents?
Yes, I get the books. All the books have gotten awards, which is really wonderful, and lovely reviews from both parents and, you know, professional journals like School Librarians Journal and that kind of thing. But what touches me the most, obviously, is when the kids write to me, because my email address is in the books.
Uh-huh.
And I am always so pleased when someone has found my book in a library or someone has given the book as a gift for a birthday present or whatever, and they write to me and they say that they love the book, that it's helped them so much. That's very gratifying.
Oh, I can certainly imagine how gratifying that would be, and how wonderful that you've received these awards.
It's nice to know that something you do has value out in the world.
Definitely.
And that, you know, for me, it's always been about helping kids. So, you know, it's the best game in town, as far as I can tell.
Yes. Now, I had thought about, I'm not quite sure what to name this, what to title this conversation that we're having. I thought about naming it Understanding Teenage Psychology with Annie Fox. So let's see if maybe you can make some generalizations about teenage psychology.
Okay.
What's going on with teens these days?
Well, there's the developmental stuff, which doesn't change from generation to generation. That's what we talked about, that being a transitionary being, in a way, you're leaving childhood, you're not quite in adulthood, you've got residual ties to childhood with your parents, for sure, and sometimes with old friends who have known you since kindergarten, and yet you're aspiring to move into adulthood, and you're looking for signs that you are ready to be more grown up. And that's why teenagers are always pushing their parents to allow them to do things. Why can't I do this? Why can't I go out on a date? Why can't I go to this party? Why can't I just go somewhere on my own? Why do I have to call you? Why do I have to check in? That struggle for independence,
yes,
is classic, and it's developmental, and it was going on centuries ago in all different cultures. That hasn't changed. But I do a talk for parents called Why 21st Century Teens Need 21st Century Parenting. And that aspect of what's going on with teens today is very different. And I attribute the fact that we live in a faster world, a louder world, a more plugged-in world, and a world where there really are fewer adults around. And so a lot of the information and the norms of adolescence are being formed outside of the family.
Yes, yes. I think that teen culture, kid culture, and media culture have an enormous impact that really threatens to overshadow the amount of influence that parents can have.
It's a tough job for parents these days to make their influence known. It's not impossible, but they need to pay attention and they need to actually be around more than they are. They are, I think, perhaps abdicating parental responsibility sooner because their kids are saying, I don't need you to parent me anymore. And parents are distracted with other things,
mm-hmm.
not things that are bad, things like earning a living, but as a result, the kids are on their own more. And when kids are on their own, they are getting their dose of authority from equally clueless peers. Mm-hmm. This is not a good thing because as a result, they end up, it's an echo chamber. They tell themselves, oh, well, this is normal or this is what's right. Where parents have the long view and they also always have their child's best interest in mind. Peers do not always have the kid's best interest in mind. And so you're going to get different feedback.
Do you think parents are sometimes intimidated or fearful to intrude in their kids' lives?
I think that can be the case, especially if they have abdicated a role of authority and leadership in the family.
Okay.
And that's a process, too. That happens gradually. And it's hard to take it back once you have said, okay, I guess my job's over. And then, you know, what are you? You're the chauffeur. You're the person who, you know, supplies the food and the clothing, but you aren't really the leader in the family. And that's very sad because I truly believe that kids, for all their talk about wanting to be independent, really know that they're not adults yet and don't necessarily feel really comfortable calling all the shots in the family.
And at some level, they crave it, even as they're fighting against it.
I agree. Uh-huh. So the most well-balanced kids are the ones who have figured out that they can negotiate with parents and learn from parents. I'm assuming here, and this may be a big assumption, that their parents respect the fact that their tweens and teens are growing and evolving into adults. So the parents don't have some special need to keep them as little kids. There are some parents like that, but let's assume the best case, that you've got an enlightened parent who knows what their job is. Their job is to prepare this young person to become a fully functioning adult. And there's a set of steps along the way where you as a parent, in fact, encourage your children to take more responsibility, to earn more independence, to be accountable. When you've got that kind of a setup and a relationship between a teenager and an adult, then that's very, very healthy. And when the kid is realizing it, hey, you know, I think I got myself in over my head, it's safe to go back to the parent and ask for advice because they know that the parent is there to help them cross the finish line into adulthood. And so there is less push and pull there.
Okay, well, I think we probably are at a place where we're about to wind down here. And again, I want to refer people to your website. And you have it very nicely divided into different constituencies. So you've got a part for teens. You've got a section here called I'm a Teen and another section called I'm a Parent and another section called I'm an Educator. And there are also links to your other books. You have Too Stressed to Think about teen stress. And you've got one called The Teen Survival Guide to Dating and Relating. So there are a lot of valuable tools here for educators, for parents, and for teens.
I'm thinking about the fact that this idea of mine 12 years ago to help kids has grown with the technology, and it's really quite gratifying to see that there are people from around the world coming to this site and getting questions answered, and for parents, helping them become more effective parents, which of course, as you and I know, helps teens grow in healthy ways. So it's all good.
Yes. Well, Annie Fox, it's great to talk to you again. And thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David, and thank you for all that you do.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Annie Fox. I've titled this episode, Understanding Teenage Psychology, and while Annie is not a psychologist, strictly speaking, I think you'll agree that she definitely has a good working grasp on the issues and concerns of teen life. Annie has such brio, vitality, energy, and I think that's a quality that young people are especially responsive to. If you're a parent, teacher, or teen yourself, I really encourage you to check out Annie's very beautiful website at www.anniefox.com. And Annie Fox is spelled AnnieFox.com. And you'll find lots of tools and resources there for you, regardless of which of those three categories you're in. I think her books would make terrific gifts, too, if there's a teen in your life. You're on the couch.
Couch again with Dr. Dave. And shrink wrap radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio. Shrink wrap radio.
It's shrink wrap radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
This is Shrink Wrap Radio number 198. So time is running out for you to send in your congrats for show number 200. Send me an MP3 file or leave a voicemail at 206-337-0622. We have one new addition to our Frapper map. So here's a hearty welcome to Sarah of Levittown, Pennsylvania, who writes, "Hey, Dr. Dave, keep up the great podcasts. Nice to see the updates on Twitter. If you're not on our Frapper map, please add yourself. You'll find a link to it on our website, or you can simply go to www.frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio. And speaking of Twitter, you can follow my tweets at twitter.com/shrinkwrapradio. It's a good way to get notified about the latest shows, plus any precious pearls of wisdom that might come to mind. I'm in my fourth year of doing this podcast, and amazingly, my technical setup is still evolving. As you might recall, I recently added a page to the Shrink Wrap Radio site describing my podcasting setup. You'll find it on the pull-down menu that reads About Dr. Dave. I put that page up about a week or two ago, and now I've added new screen captures and text, which should be of interest to any of you who are podcasters or who are contemplating becoming podcasters. As you may know, most of my interviews are conducted over the phone using Skype. One major change is that I'm now using the Mac software program Audio Hijack Pro to record the Skype conversation. This allows me to capture my guest side of the conversation and my side of the conversation on two different tracks. The other really big change is I've just started to use Bias Peak Pro 6, an amazingly powerful audio editing package, to clean up the recording. One of the perennial problems of these Skype recordings has been that because we aren't in the same room and can't see each other, my guest and I will interrupt each other, both speaking at the same time. Now, with Peak Pro 6, I can lay down silence on one track or the other so that only one person is heard speaking. Using that same technique, I can also silence any sneezes, coughs, or lip smacking that might crop up on either side of the conversation. I'd already been using another Bias product, SoundSoap Pro, to remove background noise from the audio tracks. It integrates nicely with Peak Pro 6 so that I can access it within Peak Pro as a plug-in. At any rate, you'll find screen captures showing these products and links to the companies that make them on the website. And hopefully, all of this will work so smoothly that as a listener, you won't be aware of any of it. Like a great violinist, we do our best to make it look, or should I say, sound easy. Here's a question for all you professionals out there, psychologists, nurses, social workers, licensed counselors. How would you like to be able to earn the CE units, the continuing education units you need for keeping your licenses current by listening to Shrink Wrap Radio? I'm currently exploring the possibility of putting together some show bundles. For example, 6 or 8 hours on dreams, for which you could earn CE units by listening, answering a few exam questions to make sure you listened, and paying a nominal fee. Please let me know if this is an idea you'd like me to pursue. From time to time, I like to mention that Shrink Wrap Radio is part of the ProMed Network and also sciencepodcasters.org. You'll find selected episodes on those sites as well. If you are relatively new to this show, you may not realize that all of the episodes are as timely as the day they were recorded. You can go all the way back to episode number 1 on our site, and you will also find archival feeds in the iTunes store in addition to the main feed. And if you haven't yet subscribed, please do so. It costs you nothing. It just means the shows will show up regularly in your iTunes podcast area or whatever feed reader or podcatcher you're using. You'll find a link for subscribing in iTunes on our site. There's a lot of work that goes into producing each one of these episodes. As I've said in the past, I probably put about 10 hours into each one. Using the new Peak Pro 6 tool that I described earlier adds yet another level of editing to the process. So let me again appeal to you for your support. You now have access to almost 200 shows or more than 200 hours of education and entertainment, as well as free access to transcripts for most of the interviews. If you haven't done so already, please go to Shrink Wrap Radio and click on the big green donate button, which will take you to the place where you can use either a credit card or PayPal to choose among a number of donation options. Your support will keep this operation humming. Yes, we do have affiliate sponsors, and we greatly appreciate your patronage of them. At the same time, the income stream from these various affiliates is but a trickle, and that's why your donations are an important part of the mix. Enough said.
Yeah, you should really listen to that Dr. Dave show. A lot of people are tuning in. It's extremely popular. I've met Dr. Dave a couple times and listened to his show and liked it very much. There's a lot of good stuff there. And for those of you who are into what your mind is doing, it's an interesting little piece of your body. What's going on in your head? You might want to check it out. Shrink Wrap Radio, shrinkwrapradio.com.
Hey, Adam Curry, podfather of us all. Thanks again for that plug. Now let's go to our mailbag. First, we hear from Tom in Chicago, who writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, at this point, I would consider your show to be an important part of my graduate education." Exclamation point. All right. He goes on to say, "I'm a master's student at the Adler School of Professional Psychology in Chicago and have been a listener for just over a year. I wanted to email now regarding your most recent interview with Sarah Hanna Radcliffe. I also very much appreciated the interview on ego state psychotherapy and feel that it will be very relevant as I discover my approach to therapy. I've been a meditator for the past year, and upon hearing the interview, I immediately ordered the trial demo of HoloSync. After exploring the very accessible materials that were sent to me, I decided to order the full Prologue program. Currently, I am in the first few days of my new audio meditation practice and wanted to write so as to update your listeners. I would be most happy to send you and your audience some updates on the program related to my personal experience if you'd be interested. Otherwise, I most appreciate your willingness to give your time in order to further the minds of all your listeners. Although you seem to be no longer taking on a traditional professor role, you're most definitely expanding the meaning of a teacher in this internet age. Based on my own experience, I am certain your listeners are very satisfied. Thank you for all your great work. Most sincerely, Tom." Well, I wrote Tom thanking him for his kind words of support and letting him know that I like his idea of some periodic reports about his experiences with the HoloSync program that Sarah Hanna Radcliffe raves about, as does one of my close friends. And let me hasten to add that HoloSync is not a sponsor, but I like the idea of a reporter in the field updating us on his progress, and I suggested to Tom that maybe he could send me some audio reports. So here is Tom's first report to us.
"Hello, Dr. Dave and fellow Shrink Wrap Radio listeners. My name is Tom, and I'm a graduate student in Chicago studying counseling and art therapy. I'm speaking today to give an update on my use of the HoloSync meditation system. This was discussed in episode 193, Holistic Psychotherapy. As of today, I have used it for almost 2 weeks. Before I give my initial impressions, I would like to remind our listeners that you can order a free demo on the Research Institute's website. This is actually how I got started. Thus far, HoloSync has been very good to help me commit to a time to meditate. In addition to this, my meditations are becoming consistently deeper and also consistently more relaxing. I have been a meditator for about a year now, and in the past, I've always focused on observing my breath, but now I find myself thought-watching or observing my thoughts as they arise and releasing them afterwards. This seems to be more of what I do when I use the system. Thus far, there have been no huge changes in the reduction of stress in my life or feelings of stress. There has also been no significant increase in my energy levels. Although I have not experienced any huge change, I do very much enjoy using the system and find, like I said, that it really helps me commit to meditating. I hope to be back in the future to give you more updates on my experience, and I encourage our listeners to check out the websites and also consider ordering the demo. That's it for now. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, Tom, thank you for that report. Next we hear from Graham in Palmdale, California. And I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that name correctly. It's an unusual spelling that I haven't encountered before, G-R-A-E-M-E. And I'm not even sure of the gender given that spelling. But at any rate, Graham writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, I so enjoy your podcast because you've interviewed some really interesting guests who've excited my imagination, given me multiple aha moments, and even made me cry at times because I get so caught up in the feelings projected and described by your guests." Wow, I really couldn't hope for more than that. Graham goes on to say, "Your interviewing style is so non-judgmental. You really let the spirit of your guests come through. I decided to start from the oldest show that was on iTunes in January when I came across your podcast, and I've been catching up at the rate of 2 or 3 shows every few days since then. Two shows I particularly like came back to back, and they had a kind of synchronicity, which you said in at least one episode seems to happen a lot on your show. In the first, number 147, Nirvana and the Brain, Jill Bolte Taylor described her insight that the, quotes, I, that is her identity, is not one specific thing, but a process of neural activity. This becomes clear to her when the process changed in her brain. Then your next guest, Sarah Hanna Radcliffe, in number 148, Ego State Psychotherapy, described the different parts that make up the whole I, and how you can get them to talk to one another. In another show around the same time, number 146, The Individual Versus the Collective on the Internet, you talked with some students and one of them expressed very negative feelings toward role-playing games like Second Life. There are so many arguments that can be made on the other side, but she was such a strong personality that none of the other students wanted to challenge her. I think she might have been a teaching assistant, so she pulled rank on the other people there. You know, I think you're right. I think she was one of the TAs. Anyway, you pointed out that you know of a person who observed how the Sims get rewarded for certain types of behavior, and so she tried out that behavior in real life, and she too was rewarded. So role-playing can have some real benefits. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, much older than those students, but I see things in many shades of gray now. Not so much black and white the way I did in my youth. Your show supports that way of looking at things by questioning absolutes, admitting that every rule has exceptions, that we don't know everything, and in particular that the experiences we have as conscious beings has as much to do with the elephant as its rider. The elephant and rider is the metaphor used by Jonathan Haidt in number 142, The Happiness Hypothesis, to describe the conscious and unconscious mind. I particularly like the metaphor because of the way it works with hypnosis. Quotes, "Go to sleep now. I want to talk to your elephant and even train him to change his ways." Close quote. Then when the rider wakes up, he recalls nothing but finds his elephant is treating him much better. My 22-year-old daughter said her dog has consciousness. She can tell. I said, maybe just a little. Yes, she said. Sadie is a little tiny dog sitting on the elephant. I asked her, does an elephant have a consciousness? Yes, she said, the elephant sits on a T-Rex. I could go on and on, but I'll just end this email here. I can't wait to listen to the rest of 2008 and then the first few of 2009. So long for now, Graham. Graham, thanks for that delightful email. If you've been listening to Shrink Wrap Radio for any length of time, you know that I'm a gadget guy. If you're a gadget person or have one in your life, Brookstone.com is one of the best places you can shop. Brookstone isn't just about gadgets, though. They're America's number one retailer of innovative gifts and products for your home, your home office, bedroom, bathroom, kitchen, yard, and more. Brookstone is known for offering an assortment of consumer products that are functional in purpose, distinctive in quality and design, and not widely available from other retailers. We have a Brookstone affiliate link on our site at shrinkwrapradio.com, and clicking on that link will save you 10% off your order, plus helps to support this podcast. Or you can just go directly to brookstone.com and use the discount code SHOWRAP, that's SHOWRAP, at checkout. Okay, that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com, and in addition to emails, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod. You're encouraged to leave voice messages using the MyChingo button on the site. And in the U.S., you can leave voicemails on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Annie Fox, for sharing her insights on teen psychology. My next guest will be Robert Moss, whose most recent book is The Secret History of Dreaming. I recently heard him speak at a local bookstore, and he's especially charismatic. You won't want to miss it. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.